Silva versus New York City Transit Authority. Council, before we get started, I just want to make a record that we received two letters from you, Attorney, is it Kramer?
Yes, Your Honor, though we only submitted one letter.
Oh, I'm sorry, I apologize. And we received two letters from your opposing counsel. And so I do have a question for your opposing counsel when he comes up to the lectern about those letters, but that's all.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Max Crema for the MTA and its affiliate NYCTA from Kaplan Martin. Every day, the MTA carries millions of New Yorkers through a century-old subway system. Doing that safely requires system-wide judgments that balance competing safety priorities, not to mention engineering feasibility and limited public resources. Platform screen doors, or PSDs, illustrate these trade-offs. The MTA has studied them in great detail, including by convening a special platform screen door task force. Ultimately, the MTA, like every other mass transit system in the United States, chose an incremental course. Further consideration, and pilot project planning. That is the decision that New York law entrusts to the MTA. The decision below should be reversed for two reasons. First, this court has collateral order jurisdiction over the qualified immunity defense. And second, the MTA is entitled to qualified immunity.
I do have a question for you, however, about your letter as well.
Yes,
and
Your
this
Honor.
Is my question. In your letter to the court, which we received yesterday, you note, first, in light of In re World Trade Center disaster site litigation, and you give the citation, the MTA defendants will not pursue interlocutory review of the district court's denial of summary judgment on their governmental function defense. The MTA defendants do not withdraw or waive the underlying defense, which they may assert in any appeal from the final judgment, but the MTA defendants will focus their presentation on the qualified immunity defense. So I just want to confirm, because your letter said you intended to do that, are you in fact withdrawing the first part of your argument relating to the governmental function defense immunity and claiming that was subject to an interlocutory appeal?
That's right, Your Honor. We're withdrawing the jurisdictional argument as to that point. And that is a relevant distinction here, because plaintiff largely relies on World Trade Center to argue that there's no jurisdiction over the qualified immunity defense. But of course, that's wrong. World Trade Center did not mention New York's qualified immunity defense.
I guess you're right, but it sets out a framework for deciding if something is subject to the collateral order doctrine or not. And it seemed like things it considered are whether there's some kind of statute that references immunity from suit, not just immunity from liability. And then it says that New York law strongly disfavors treating these as immunities instead of defenses. And that's how it decides an open question in that case as to whether something is a defense from liability or an immunity. So I guess I'm applying that reasoning here. Those factors seem to cut in the same direction. Nothing in New York law that says immunity from suit, and just this general New York law presumption or disfavoring with respect to immunities from suit.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yes, I'd like to address that straight on. So first, the qualified immunity defense is quite different from the governmental immunity defense addressed in World Trade Center. There is a deeply rooted tradition in New York law of treating it as an immunity from suit. I would point the court to Urquhart, which we cited in our reply brief and which is discussed extensively in Weiss, the underlying case for this doctrine, which says expressly no civil action can be maintained. And Weiss says that has been universally followed since the Court of Appeals announced it in 1883. I think that language is actually much stronger than the Stafford Act that was analyzed in World Trade Center, which only said that there was immunity from liability rather than immunity from suit. And I would also point the court to Weiss itself, where it discusses the nature of the immunity at issue. So Weiss expressly cites to FTCA claims. It cites to federal cases interpreting the FTCA at 568. And of course, in World Trade Center, the reference to the Federal Claims Tort Act was found in the congressional record, was found to be indication that Congress intended the Stafford Act to be an immunity from suit. So those two elements match up there.
There's the Brown decision as well, 89 New York 2nd, where that case cites Weiss as an example of a legal, quote, a legal defense which the state may interpose to avoid liability. Not to avoid suit, but to avoid liability.
Yes, Your Honor.
What are we to do with that? We have to look to New York law.
Of course. And I have three answers, Your Honor.
Okay.
First, World Trade Center itself recognizes that that language may well have been dicta in Brown. I'm pointing to footnote 16 of the World Trade Center decision.
Okay.
It also cautions the court against relying too heavily on how New York courts characterize an immunity, whether that be immunity from suit or immunity from liability, because of course in New York, there are free appeals from the trial court at any stage of the, or almost any stage of the proceeding. And so World Trade Center itself says that you shouldn't rely too heavily on how a New York court characterizes it, because they're simply not dealing with the Cohen issue that this court faces. Finally, Your Honors, I would say that unlike others,
my recollection is that what World Trade Center was saying is the question of whether you actually get interlocutory review in New York is not really that useful a marker, because in New York there's this very different rule for when you can take interlocutory appeals, right? So that's what the World Trade Center court was analyzing when it said don't look to state law. But then it looks to state law for other things, right, like assessing whether it's immunity or immunity from suit or immunity from liability.
I think that's exactly right, Your Honor. The court looks to the nature of the right under state law to determine whether, and I'm quoting, it is an immunity from suit or its functional equivalent. That's 187 in the World Trade Center. And so my point was not that it shouldn't consider how courts characterize the right, but rather that the characterization used by New York courts may be imprecise because they're simply not considering the federal appeal question. And so if you...
Why don't you finish your answer?
Thank you, Your Honor. If you look to the nature of the right as described in Weiss, I think it's incredibly clear. Weiss identifies three functions. First, it describes it historically as an immunity from suit. That's the Urquhart decision that I referenced earlier. No civil action can be maintained. Second, it says it furthers separation of powers. Weiss says it gives expression to the important and continuing need to preserve the pattern of distribution of governmental functions prescribed by the Constitution and the state.
That sounds like it's saying it's important that we have immunity from liability, not important that we have immunity from suit.
World Trade Center says that, of course, that the court shouldn't import federal conceptions of separation of powers when considering a state court law, a state court right. But of course, here we actually have Weiss itself saying that this is meant to be a separation of powers distinction. And then finally, I'll just say, and to Your Honor's point, the third purpose that Weiss serves is it prevents judicial and jury second guessing of state planning decisions. That comes directly from the case. Where a duly authorized public planning body has entered and passed on the very same question of risk, it should be withdrawn from the jury and the court.
But again, that seems like that is satisfied if you have immunity from liability.
Your Honor, I think that Weiss is describing an immunity from suit. And as I mentioned, it expressly cites Urquhart. No civil action can be maintained. It cites the FTCA cases, which of course were considered persuasive authority in the WTC's analysis of the Stafford Act. I'll also say that the concerns of Weiss map onto the WTC's analysis of the Stafford Act as well. The WTC was concerned about withdrawing these questions from the courts and consolidating them in the executive branch. And I think that's just a one-to-one match with World Trade Center.
Well, let me pursue my question then. I understand that Weiss definitely provides you with some support for your argument. But Weiss also, when it's talking about that, says that it's concerned about traditional reliance on a jury verdict to assess fault and general tort liability. It's speaking there only to liability when it clarifies that liability for injury arising out of the operation of a duly executed highway safety plan may only be predicated on proof that the plan either was evolved without adequate study or lacked reasonable basis. That all suggests that there may be limits on liability question as it's put to the jury, but that doesn't mean that you don't go to an action on it. And subsequent Court of Appeals decisions suggest that what qualified immunity does is limit the questions the jury answers. It doesn't wholly shield the government from suit. I'm looking now at Turturro versus City of New York from 2016, which recognizes that even if there's a traffic study, it may be the entity may be held liable when its study is plainly inadequate, and goes on to say the jury can assess if the government's subsequent remedial measure is plainly inadequate or has no reasonable basis. All of that seems to be leaving the door open for a suit, and particularly when we consider that in light of New York's general aversion to immunity from suit rather than just from liability. I'm having trouble saying that New York contemplates that there's no action in these cases.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to address those points in turn.
Please.
Of course, there are circumstances in which Weiss immunity can go to a jury. The same is true for many other immunities that this court can exercise collateral jurisdiction over, including qualified immunity or absolute immunity in the federal context.
So you're saying some questions can go to a jury, but not others?
That's right, Your Honor. It depends on whether or not the predicates under the analysis are shown. And I want to be specific here, because Turo, which Your Honor cited, is a specific case in which the court found that there was no study.
That's a curious way to look at immunity, I think. But in any event, the trial court did think there were questions of fact about whether the remedial plan and the protective actions here. So are you saying that was appropriately submitted to the jury?
Your Honor, I'd like to address both of those points because I think they're very important. The standard here is whether the authority under Weiss is whether the authority considered and passed on the issue. Once it has, that raises fact issues that can go to the jury, such as whether the study was adequate or the plan that was adopted had a rational basis. But that first question is a question of law, and the New York courts uniformly asked that question. And I want to deal with Turturro because Your Honor raised it. In that case, the court expressly held that while there were some studies that were conducted, none of them were studies that were conducted of the issue that had to go to the jury. And therefore, qualified immunity did not apply. And that is quite different from the case here, where there very clearly was a study that was conducted. And Your Honor raised...
Underlying all that, isn't the premise that whether it goes to the jury or doesn't, whether there's a question of fact that should or shouldn't go to the jury, they all deal with defenses to liability, not suit.
I disagree, Your Honor. I think that the court in Urquhart, and which was quoted extensively in Weiss, is very clear on this. It says that no civil action can be maintained.
I guess there's language like that, but then there's language in Turturro that talks about this as being immunity from liability, right?
Of course, Your Honor. I think it's important to understand when New York courts are discussing that distinction, they mean something quite different. Brown itself discusses an immunity from suit in the context of the court's sovereign immunity. Weiss is not an aspect of the government's sovereign immunity. It is, in fact, a separate distinction that's made very clear in Weiss. And so when New York courts sometimes say immunity from suit or immunity from action, they simply mean that distinction in New York law.
Let me ask you a different question altogether, and that is, looking at this case from 30,000 foot view, and I know there was litigation of whether the trial should be stayed or not. This case has already been tried. It's gone to a jury. And I noticed there are two motions pending, and I'm not going to get into the substance of those, but the reality is challenging the verdict and challenging no judgment has entered, as I understand, but there's post-trial motion practice going on. And here you're asking us to address an issue to prevent a suit that has already occurred. What are we to do with that?
I understand, Your Honor. I do have a couple responses.
Okay.
The first is that under WTC, the question of whether there's an appealable right, and I quote here, cannot depend on the facts of a particular case. The MTA filed its notice of appeal at an appropriate time. That appeal is still pending. And of course, there's relief this court can provide. It's not moot. I would also point, Your Honor, to Weiss itself, which reversed a jury verdict on this very issue. And it said, quote, a jury verdict is neither sacrosanct nor preferable. And in fact, the issue here is that this was submitted to a jury, which it should not have been under New York law. This was an issue reserved to the court and ultimately to the MTA as
but
the author.
But you're saying if you win here, if you persuade us that this is immunity from suit, that way you don't have to engage in any more practice in the district court or any appeal of that jury verdict.
That is the purpose of the qualified immunity defense, Your Honor. But
practically speaking, that's what you want to have happen here.
Your Honor, our appeal is limited to counts 2 and 3 of the complaint, which concern the qualified immunity defense. Count 1 would still exist. That's the negligence count.
So we'd still be reviewing the jury verdict on that in a separate appeal?
You know, Your Honor, I think that would depend on precisely what arguments were submitted to the trial court and might be a subject of further briefing before the district court. But I suspect it would shift how the case came out, while not foreclosing further proceedings.
I believe Judge Kovner may have had your cover.
I appreciate the court's patience. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning, Attorney Shields.
Yes.
Good morning, Your Honor. I do have a question relating to the two letters that you submitted to the court.
Yes, Your Honor.
I appreciate that you submitted those letters to the court. In reading, it was not clear to me from reading your letters, but it sounded like some of these errors that occurred in briefing were the result of the use of AI to prepare some of these briefs, but you don't actually note that in your letters. And I'm asking you whether, in fact, that was the case. And I appreciate that you said procedures have been implemented in your firm to not have that occur, but was that the result of the use of AI?
Your Honor, can I first say something?
Yes.
We take this issue incredibly seriously at our firm. My boss is here in the back. And the issues that happened in these briefings, I've submitted briefs in 3 prior cases before this court, twice as the appellant, once as the appellee. We've never had any issues. Those cases are Daba v. Franklin, 22-845, Van versus the City of Rochester, 24-3186. Cox versus the City of Rochester, 25-254. We've never had these issues before, and I can assure the court that they'll never happen again, and we deeply apologize for the errors in the briefs. Now, to be frank with the court, I believe that the errors in the reply memorandum most likely were issues that arose from the use of AI. And I'd like to explain what my personal practice is when I use AI to write a brief. The first thing that I'll do is I'll ask it to draft a memorandum on the issues in the case, but I don't have it draft the brief itself. And so I take that memorandum and then I go and I draft the brief itself. When I draft a brief, ordinarily what I do, and this goes more to the issues in the merits brief, I have 2 screens. On one screen, I have my Westlaw up. On the other screen, I have a Word document. I copy and paste from the cases in Westlaw into my Word document, and I also take notes into the Word document. And the issues that were in the merits brief primarily were cases that were quoted where they should have been paraphrased. And in those mistakes, I believe what happened was at first we believed that the merits brief was actually due basically right in the middle of the trial of this case, and we were rushing we were sloppy. And I think that I transposed notes and put them in quotations.
So how was it discovered? How was the error discovered? Because, I mean, as you say in your letter, there are any number of quotes that just are not in the cases that they're attributed to.
In preparing for oral argument, Your Honor, we did the review that we should have done before we submitted the briefs to the court, and we also reached out to defense counsel, who identified some of the quotes as well.
Well, you know, however the errors happened, one of the problems with the submission, as far as I'm concerned anyway, is I read the brief that was actually submitted. Now I have a letter that says to me, well, at this page and this document, this quote isn't right. At this page and this document, this quote isn't right. I think at a minimum, it should have been a motion to submit a corrected brief so that I don't have to work with the two documents comparing them that way. And I would urge that you do that. May I ask that be done?
I'm happy to take
next week, next Friday?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, thank you. I just want to make sure my colleagues don't have further questions relating to that. Counsel, I appreciate your responses. I'm sure your opponents appreciate your candor with the court. I have to caution you, and I think you've seen this, and caution your firm. AI can be a wonderful resource, but it has, I can assure you there's an attorney in the state that I primarily work out of in Connecticut that was recently suspended for precisely this type of issue. So I cannot caution you more and your firm that the use of AI has its perils. Thank you. We've used up about 3 minutes of your time, so we will certainly let you go over to make your argument. 5 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. And we sincerely apologize again, and it will not happen again. So I want to jump right into the issues that we're focused on with appellant's counsel. First, what we would say is that World Trade Center decides this case, and that is because it describes the state's common law discretionary function immunity. Then, in order to do that, what it relies on is Brown versus the state of New York. And in Brown, the Court of Appeals held that legal defenses which a state may interpose to avoid liability, including the discretionary actions defense, which sometimes is referred to loosely as immunities, should not be confused with sovereign immunity. Brown states that general principle. Brown specifically lists Weiss versus Vogt itself twice in its decision. Brown versus State, in the majority opinion answering the dissent, cataloged, quote, legal defenses which the state may interpose to avoid liability. And then it went on to say, it said that basically twice. And then Weiss itself adjudicated a liability rule. It disclaimed it. Weiss versus Vogt was an appeal from a post-trial verdict, which itself is evidence that New York treats these immunities as immunity from liability and not immunity from suit. After Weiss, every single Court of Appeals case that has decided either governmental function immunity or qualified immunity has described them as immunities from suit. First, you have Friedman versus the state of New York, which says, quote, at 283, in the field of traffic design engineering, the state is accorded a qualified immunity from liability arising out of a highway planning decision. And that's citing Weiss versus Vogt. And then it goes on to say at 284, Under this doctrine of qualified immunity, a governmental body may be held liable when its study of a traffic condition is plainly inadequate or there's no reasonable basis for its traffic plan. If we go forward to Haddock versus the State of New York, so Friedman was a 1986 case. Haddock versus the State of New York decided a governmental function immunity case. That's a 1990 case. And it says, when discretion is exercised, quote, a municipal defendant generally is not answerable in damages. And that's citing Weiss versus Fote. And then they say, quote, we therefore turn directly to the question of immunity from liability for that act. And so, again, another case describing, in that case, governmental function immunity as an immunity from liability. Next, you go to a 1990 case, Ernst v. Red Creek Central School District, 93 New York 2nd, 664, which said at 673, quoting Weiss versus, it says, quote, Weiss versus Fote does not immunize the county from liability to plaintiff. That case held that a defendant has qualified immunity where a duly authorized public planning body has entertained and passed on the very same question of risk as would ordinarily go to the jury. So that is the Court of Appeals describing Weiss's immunity as qualified immunity that would go to the jury, an immunity from liability.
Let me ask you if you would address your opponent in response, sent a letter late yesterday, withdrawing its appeal relating to its right to an interlocutory appeal on immunity from suit for governmental function.
Yes, sir.
And it now explained it did so because of your reliance on In Re World Trade Center disaster site litigation, and that it's inapplicable to their remaining claim of immunity from suit, that being qualified immunity.
Yes,
what's your response to the claim that World Trade Center case does not apply to qualified immunity?
So our response, Your Honor, is that while World Trade Center did not specifically involve a qualified immunity defense in that case, it more specifically addressed the general immunities under New York law and how they're treated by the Court of Appeals of New York. And that's why I've been going through both cases from the Court of Appeals that deal with governmental immunity and qualified immunity, because they're both just defenses to liability and not immunities from suit. And so World Trade Center set out the principles for how these immunities are treated. And there's a direct line from World Trade Center to Brown, to Weiss, to Friedman, to Ernst, other cases, and then to Totoro, which determined both that governmental immunity and qualified immunity were simply immunities from liability and not liability
for suit. Don't have to deal with this issue the same way federal courts do, right? Because they have a broad availability of interlocutory appeal. So you can take a appeal immediately of a qualified immunity decision in New York courts, right?
Correct.
So what is it we're looking at when we look at those decisions you're pointing us to from New York courts? What is it you think tells us the answer to the question of how to proceed? Is it just language about liability or?
The specific questions about liability, and if you look at the facts of most of the cases, they're usually appeals from post-trial verdicts.
But on anybody's view, there are sometimes going to be qualified immunity cases that legitimately go to the jury, right? There's a dispute of fact, and then the case is going to go to a jury no matter whether a collateral appeal is available from a qualified immunity decision, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think that looking at the fundamental difference between a qualified immunity under Weiss versus Fote versus qualified immunity, for example, under Section 1983, is important to understand the distinction. Under 1983, it's a mixed question of law and fact. And so at least a portion of that question has to be determined by the court. Under Weiss versus Fote, it's only fact questions. There's the factual predicate. Was there a study conducted in the first place? And in this case, as Your Honors already know, there was a jury trial and a special interrogatory was presented to the jury and they answered, no, there was no study conducted. That is the proper way under New York law for one of these cases to be tried. Judge Block got it right in this case by denying their appeal and allowing the case to proceed. The panel of this circuit got it right when they denied the emergency stay motion and allowed the case to proceed to trial. And the special interrogatory went to the jury just as it does in cases in New York State every single day. Thank you, Your Honor.
I want to ask you a question that I asked your opponent, and that is practically this case. Your opponent seems to say that a decision by this court that qualified immunity means immunity from suit would basically eliminate a need to litigate the post-trial matters that are currently pending before the district court. Is your position the same?
Yes, Your Honor, other than, as my opponent pointed out, there is also a post-trial motion on the first negligence claim, which was a claim directly against the conductor of the train for failing to stop in time before hitting our client.
I do want to just remind you that if you would submit the corrected brief, and I want to remind you that the corrected brief should only include those corrections that you gave to the court. It's not an opportunity to address anything that's come up today because your opponent is not going to file anything. All right?
Thank you. Your Honors. Thank you very much.
And if we were not clear, by next Friday, so a week from today, you could do it sooner, but
yes,
by next Friday.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You have reserved 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Mr. Krem, I'm going to start off right away with a question to you. I think I misunderstood when you were arguing before about how there could be questions on qualified immunity. Indeed, then you don't get the qualified immunity from suit, even when it's that, if there are questions of fact. And that's what Judge Block seems to have found. I'm looking again at pages 8 and 9 of his decision about why he thought there were questions of fact on the adequacy of the studies and the reasonable basis for how the MTA's platform safety decision evolved. Tell me why you think there's error there, because it would seem to me whether it's immunity from suit or from liability, if there are questions of fact, you're not going to get qualified immunity. Is that right?
That's right, Your Honor.
Okay, and so tell me what the error is here.
We're not disputing the genuineness. We're disputing the materiality of the facts before Judge Block. Judge Block's analysis commits a classic Weiss mistake. He recites the correct standard, but then his reasoning relies on two things: plaintiff's expert report critiquing the MTA study and an offer from Seoul. He then says, quote, and this is on page 9, credibility assessments of experts are matters for the jury. That is expressly what Weiss forbids. It says, quote, something more than a mere choice between conflicting opinions of experts is required. That's at page 588. And so Judge Block's analysis just got the standard wrong. And if you look at the record,
how else are you going to resolve the question? I mean, one expert says, or the folks the MTA was relying on, even in-house, say this is reasonable. This is, and let's say it wasn't one person. Let's say, you know, you had a whole slew of people and they all said, this is totally unreasonable. You're saying that none of that matters.
Your Honor, the standard under New York law is not reasonableness. It's actually, quote, plainly inadequate. The study has to be plainly inadequate.
All right, let's say that's what the experts say, that it was plainly inadequate.
Your Honor, I would point to the court. This is meant to be a broad immunity for planners. The question is whether a planner considered the issue. And I would point the court to Pedraza v. NYCTA. That's the First Department's decision from 2020. I think it's remarkably instructive. It surveys several New York cases holding that the MTA is entitled to qualified immunity when deciding the speed that its trains enter into platform, into stations at. And that the two reasons it gave were, one, the speeds were set by the Speed Policy Committee. Here, of course, we have a special station platform door task force. And then two, because, and those speeds followed industry accepted practices. Of course, no other heavy rail system in the United States has adopted PSDs.
But here you had an expert, right, who did, I think in substance, say your studies were plainly inadequate, right? So why isn't there a dispute about whether your studies were or weren't plainly inadequate?
I think there are two reasons, Your Honor. First, the case law requires much more. I would point the court, and I'll just give the court some cites. Von de Bogart, Enker, Hartford, all reject exactly that argument. But then second, the analysis that the plaintiff expert uses is also foreclosed. Their argument is that the studies the MTA did should have been under the MIL STD 882 standard, and they cite Haddock for that. But the Haddock decision is actually in accordance with all other New York law. It doesn't say that when an agency policy requires a certain type of study, then it has to follow that type of study or the study is inadequate. In Haddock, there were two key reasons why qualified immunity was denied. The first was that the internal rules of the agency were violated. And second, the agency, quote, exercised no judgment. And the court actually calls that a key fact for denying qualified immunity. That, of course, doesn't exist here. The MTA unquestionably did exercise judgment. But I just also want to point out that MTA's factual predicate for this whole MIL standard 8222 argument is incorrect. If you actually look at the underlying document, the SSPP,
this issue that you're now addressing, if we were to find that qualified immunity is an immunity to liability and not from suit, all these issues will be raised on the substantive appeal. Of presumably these arguments were made to the jury and they didn't accept them.
That of course is correct, Your Honor. And if I may briefly respond.
So are we getting to the merits? We're getting to the merits of the case, and I understand that you do in terms if we overcome the issue of whether this is an appropriate matter for appeal. I understand that, but.
Your Honor is, of course, correct. And I didn't have a chance to address my opponent's jurisdictional arguments. I see that I'm over time. May I take 20 seconds to do so?
Yes, we.
Thank you, Your Honor. My opponent cited to the World Trade Center decision. Of course, that doesn't address qualified immunity at all. My opponent also cited to a number of New York cases. Some call it an immunity from liability. Others do call it an immunity from suit. I don't think the language there is particularly helpful for the court because the New York courts just aren't concerned with this federal jurisdictional question. And I'd just like to point the court to the plaintiff's own reply brief at page 5, which I think kind of addresses this squarely. Plaintiff says, quote, whether a state law defense confers such an immunity from suit is determined by its nature and effect under federal jurisdictional principles, not state law labels. So, Your Honors, I see that I'm well over my time. I apologize.
Thank you to counsel. I believe that concludes the docket for the day, and we will take this matter and a reserved decision on it.